Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Vet Story. I'm Rod Rodriguez. And I'm a little sick right now. You probably can hear it in my voice. I'm a little stuffed up. And that's because I live in the DC area and we are at ground zero for the coronavirus. I'm kidding. I don't have coronavirus. But I do have the flu and I just got over it. But luckily, I'm getting over it. I'm over the hump and I'm a little congested. So I apologize if I sound a little weird, a little stuffed up. But sick or not, I really am excited to introduce you to one of my favorite veteran podcasts. It's called Team Room Talk with Chris McPhee. And what makes this podcast even more special, aside from the fact that it's a really well done show that brings veterans and people from the veteran community, the military community in to talk with Chris McPhee, who is a retired Green Beret. What makes this show even more special to me is that I know Chris. Chris McPhee is a very good friend of mine, and we've done our time overseas together. We came back, and we kind of jumped into the world of entrepreneurship together. So it's with a great pleasure that I introduce you to Chris McPhee from Team Room Talk. Chris, thanks for being on Vet Story.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Rod Rodriguez, my man. Give it up.
So you and I are going to be doing a Vet Story very soon where we're going to talk about a story that was very profound and very life-changing for you from your time in service or as your time as a veteran. But before we get to that story, which will be coming out in the new season of Vet Story, I wanted to introduce these folks, our listeners, to you and Team Room Talk. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Well, as you've already mentioned, I'm a veteran, retired, a former Green Beret. You know, I was stationed at Fort Bragg, came out of 3rd Special Forces Group. My time there was very interesting. I learned a lot while I was at Fort Bragg. I learned a lot while I was in the military. And also definitely being a Green Beret, I learned a ton of things from the people on my team, the places I was deployed to, the people I met when I got there, and just while on service, looking forward to see what the future would look like for me. And I started traveling down the road of entrepreneurship.
What is Team Room Talk about?
So the Team Room Talk podcast is a series of candid conversations with not really famous people. I would say you're not gonna hear somebody super famous on the Team Room Talk. It's just people within our space, whether it be at work or within the veteran community, that have a story to share and that we talk about their successes and failures. And the reason why I called it the Team Room Talk, initially I had another podcast that I had an idea for, didn't really pan out the way I wanted it. So I came back and I was like, I want this to be genuine. I want people to listen to it and feel like they're in the room. And I remember my days of being in a team room on an ODA on, you know, Operational Detachment Alpha. And just the conversations we would have, they would be sad. They would be happy. We would be angry with each other. People would talk about their family, you know, problems we're having with our wives, our girlfriends, our kids. They were just real conversations.
So this month, Team Room Talk is going to be focusing on Black History Month. This is especially important to you as a Black veteran, as a Black Green Beret veteran. My understanding is there aren't that many Black Green Berets.
You are definitely right. It's something I did not know until I actually was through the Q course, the qualification course, and on an ODA. It didn't really hit me until maybe a couple years into where I realized, like, everywhere I went, I was like one of maybe 60, one of 12, or You know, I have a hashtag I throw out there sometimes, one of 12. It's definitely one of 12 members on an ODA, but sometimes I'm always one of 12. But no, there's not that many, not only just Black Green Berets, but minorities in general in the Special Operations Force. We know that across the board, Rangers, Delta, whatever special mission unit you are in, you know, on whatever service platform, it's the same. So not just only in the Army and the Green Berets, it's apparent across the board. And you know, you hit it right on the head with that one.
Why is this important to you? Why is Black History Month important to you?
My thought behind it was, let's highlight current Black history. What's going on right now within, you know, the Black community, military, entrepreneurship, politics, what have you. I try to stay away from politics. You know, that's not really my thing. I'm all about the people, and the people is not politics. And that's just my point of view. I wanted to make it about current Black history going on right now, that changes are still happening. Even though Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and all the past people, they started it off, but there's people now that's continuing the journey and continuing to make a difference, not only for Black folks, but for just people of color in general, everywhere on every platform. If they feel like they're not getting their fair shake, people are speaking up. It's not even just about, oh, the Black man's getting a short hand of the stick. Whoever's getting a short hand is speaking up and is like, hey, I'm getting a short end. Like, let me get my cut. Men and women across the board.
How would you describe the Team Room Talk to somebody who's interested in listening? What can they expect? Why should they subscribe?
It's not about how to post this or how to make this quick thing. It's about life. And more importantly, if you listen to it, you'll hear me drop little nuggets about myself. And it's therapy for me just to be comfortable with who I am and help me deal with the problems that I've had in my life. So if anybody, you know, if I would say why, because it's real.
Awesome. And where can people go to listen to Team Room Talk?
So you could find the Team Room Talk podcast on iTunes. You could find it on Podbean. You could find it on Spotify, Stitcher, most of your podcast platforms. And then also teamroomtalkpodcast.com. If you punch that in, it'll take you right to my Podbean account, and you'll be able to download there. That's where you can find us. I hope you tune in and download and listen.
We're on record now. We are
live
not in control
now
of this anymore. we're going live. Finally. After we had some technical difficulties.
That's what I'm saying.
User. technical difficulties. But here we are, Chris McPhee, Carla Bond, Team Room Talk, live on Wednesday here at Bunker Labs, VIR.
Hello.
WeWork Center. Washington, D.C. We're live, and we have Mom watching us. Hi, Mom.
Y'all say hi to my mom, y'all. Hey, Mama.
So here we are, Team Room Talk, with Carla Bond, CEO and founder of Upskill VR. This is a very interesting podcast. I'm very excited to do this one because virtual reality is a thing that's been happening with gamers and just a whole lot of things out there. So I'm not going to delay this anymore because we had some delays, and I want to dive right into it. So tell everybody out here listening to the Team Room Talk, how did you get involved with VR, and you know, how did you get to the point where you are today?
So I've been a gamer for a long time. And I still retro game. I'm an old head. I like my Nintendo, my Sega.
Nintendo?
Yes.
Nintendo
64? Yeah, I still got one.
So you used to do this.
Yep, I still do it almost daily. Blowing
like,
them.
Like, what did that do?
You're supposed to clean it, because that's actually not even how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to actually take a Q-tip and clean it. But You know, everybody we just blowing it, spitting and stuff all over the place.
And then put it in and somehow and it hope. Worked. Okay.
We pray. We pray on that thing. That's what we do. Okay. And hope that it'll work. But yeah, I started with that. And I started using VR just for fun. And then I realized like that children in other countries were using VR to learn with, and it got this wild hair. If children can use it, why can't adults? So I had been an instructor for quite some time, and I was over PowerPoint myself.
Instructing where? Where are you instructing?
I was a CPR instructor for a long time. I started off as an instructor, as a smoking cessation instructor. Then I started teaching emergency management courses.
You say smoking cessation?
Smoking cessation. We're trying to get rid of these smokers out here.
Okay. Smoking cessation. So like to help people
stop smoking.
Okay. I'm thinking something else. Let me stop.
Lord, I don't. Do I want to know?
No.
I don't think I want to know.
No. Don't pay no attention.
Okay.
To me. Go ahead.
Keep going. But once I started teaching, and I kind of got over it, so I was trying to find fun ways of getting through my classes. I was over the PowerPoints, and I've had enough of the videos. So looking at those kids, if they can learn math on it, why can't we learn anything else? So that's kind of what took me where I was. So I reached out to some developers, started developing myself, and then realized that wasn't something I really wanted to do develop-wise. So I reached out to them and let them do it, and Upskill VR was formed.
So how did you get to the point where, you know, everybody has that aha moment where you were sitting down one day, it's like, you know what? I'm going to take VR and I'm going to take CPR and I'm gonna combine the two. Like, what were you doing at that moment? Take us back there. I want to know what you was thinking. Like, how'd you have the aha moment?
I don't know. I think it was just one of the times that I was sitting in class and I had a room full of people, and I actually was tired of teaching the class myself. So
traditional stand-up, traditional, you know, here's the mannequin.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Here's a mannequin, here's a PowerPoint, put your hand there and hope for the best. And then at the same time, I knew that when people left my class, if I came to them maybe even a month later, they weren't gonna remember anything I said, because that mannequin looks nothing like a human. I don't care how much the skin that they try to make it look like a human, it doesn't. So I realized as a first responder myself, I'm taken aback by certain calls that we get on. So heaven forbid it's a person that doesn't do this every day or doesn't even do it on a regular basis. They come across a human and that human looks nothing like that mannequin. Yeah, that's going to be a problem. So I still, of course, went down the rabbit hole, started researching, and used the best resource that I had at that time, Google.
Wow. So let's go back. So you mean to tell me everything you have created with Upskill VR was based off of what you learned or researched on Google?
Yes. Outside of my own personal experience, you know, I ran a call a few years ago, and it was this nurse. According to her, she had been a nurse for quite some time. And when one of her family members, Jesus Christ, I'm struggling to talk now. One of her family members had a issue, and they end up collapsing, and she was so taken aback by it, and so in her emotions that she didn't even perform CPR on them. The person was still wedged between the toilet when we got there, and this is a nurse. So how many, in my brain at that point, I'm thinking, how many CPR cards have, how many years has she recertified in CPR? But when it came down to actually doing it, and this person is no longer a mannequin and it's a human, the emotional sides that come with doing CPR, nobody deals with that. So that was my point at that point. I was kind of fed up with it. And I at one point didn't even want to teach CPR anymore without having to change the way this is done, because people just don't remember it. It's boring, it's long, it's not even realistic. So I knew with the environments and the way VR was starting to come that I knew I could make that happen that way. And those kids in different countries kind of stem from that, because I was looking at the statistics of those children that were using different sciences and using it for sciences, field trips, places. They would come to America, to D.C. in VR, but they're in a totally different country. Mm. But they were here in that moment. So I knew then if they can take that and make that the most realistic environment at that moment, I knew I could do it with a scenario based type thing, because that's essentially what gamers do. You get into these scenarios when you're dealing with RPGs and things like that, you're just going through an environment, but it's in 2D. So how much more would that be to do it in 3D?
So what's your favorite game right now?
Pistol Whip.
Pistol Whip.
Pistol Whip is my favorite game. It just came out.
So you have to make me smart because I have no clue about the gaming industry. My son plays Fortnite.
Kids play it too.
Minecraft. Those is no. two Minecraft. So Pistol Whip.
Pistol Whip.
What is that all about? Hold on.
It's fun.
Pistol Whip. I'm thinking like Pistol Whip.
You're not going around smacking people with pistols. Okay. Absolutely not.
See why I'm saying that. That's why I don't game. I'm going to stick to podcasting.
We're trying to keep things legal in VR. Okay. We ain't going around smacking people with guns in VR. Well, I mean, that would be kind of a cool game, though.
No.
You get angry, just go smack. Either way.
Attention. This is a public service announcement.
We are not promoting violence.
you exactly knew where I was going.
Yeah, my mama's shaking her head right now. Sorry, mom. We're not promoting violence.
So Pistol Whip. Like, what happens in that game?
They basically took the game Beat Saber. So let me explain Beat Saber. Beat Saber. You essentially have lightsabers, like you're on Star Wars. Temple for all my Star Wars fans out there. Shout out to all the Star Wars fans. Don't shake your head at me. I love me some Star Wars. But you have these like sabers that you have, and these squares are coming at you, and you have to hit them in the direction of the arrow that's pointing to the beat of the song. So they took that concept and then put you in sort of like this James Bond type deal. Mm-hmm. So you're shooting people to the shooting objects that look like people. We not promoting
clean
violence.
That up. Clean it up.
You see how I clean that up? where you take, at that point, you're in this sort of like this James Bond type, cop type deal, shooting bad guys as they pop out in front of you to the beat of the song.
Okay.
So, and they're coming from everywhere. So you have to really be on your A game and really be accurate.
So they mixed that all in. Now you have Pistol.
Yeah, Pistol Whip. Because Beat Saber before was my favorite game by far.
It sounds like one of my games, I think, when I did have a gaming console was Halo.
I couldn't really get in.
I mean, it was easy for me, you know, the force on force.
Yeah.
It was real easy. But other than that, I can't sit down that long.
So you got to play it in spurts.
Sit down.
It's not that bad. You got to play it in spurts.
I bought the console and I sat down and I actually played the game for like 3 hours the first time out the box. After that, I was just like, no, I'm done.
Oh, no. The newer consoles, I'm not going to play those anyway that long. But you give me, I can't count the number of times that I've beat Mario World. I can't count the number of times, and each time I do it, it's like the first time. So I will go Killer Instinct. It is in Battle Royale in my house when we play Killer Instinct.
So let's dive in and tell me how will upskill VR like change the world as we see it now with CPR, with the old method of having a mannequin doing your compressions, you know. Everybody swapping spit on that mannequin. we have to take the alcohol pad, and you know everybody's using. Sometimes the mannequins were dirty.
I'm never gonna look that. First of all, my mannequins are not dirty.
They had like little dirt on the side because they've been getting thrown in the closet. You got a mannequin sitting in the closet.
So tell
us how upskill VR is going to change the way people learn CPR. Because I remember the other day I put on your VR goggles.
It's a headset.
Okay, headset. See. I was like, is it goggles?
No, it's a headset.
And we're not even going to talk about what happened after
all
I
right,
put
Tammy
on the
headset. No, go ahead and let your audience know what happened. If you don't,
True story. I'm going to tell it as true as I can tell it.
Okay.
So Chris McPhee put on the VR.
It's the Oculus
headset.
Quest.
There we go. That brand.
Yes.
That model. And she put me, Carla put me in this skyscraper scenario. How many stories up is that? It's like
about 10.
About 10 stories. Mm-hmm. It was high. So you get in this elevator and you go up to the top, and the elevator opens and there's this plank.
It's called Richie's Plank, by
Richie's
the
way. Richie's Plank, there we go.
If
Richie's
anybody
Plank.
Wanna go
so,
check it out,
so
it's
I,
awesome.
I start, I'm like, whoa, this is real. So my body sensories just thought we were like up 10 stories in a skyscraper. And I was a little taken back, like stepping out there.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
I started low crawling on the plank.
No, he's talking about low crawling. No, Tammy Tiptoe was over there belly crawling on the floor.
I was low crawling on the plank.
Complete belly crawl. Do you hear me?
But overall, I that experience, you know, I could see how adding CPR to it and putting people in scenarios. So tell us how you plan to do that.
So we bring the human element back to CPR, and I feel like that got lost somewhere. That we got, as instructors, we got so caught up in just kicking out cards that we forgot that these skills that we're taking people on or giving them to do, they're finna go do them on some humans, and they need to know what they're doing. So, and the scenarios that we create aren't realistic at all, because the average mannequin doesn't even have arms and legs. So there's nothing human about it except for possibly the features in the face. And that wasn't enough for me. So what we plan on doing, and what we actually are doing at this point, we put people in the most realistic scenario that we can without it being real. That's the closest thing to somebody going into cardiac arrest that you have to say that you'll ever get without somebody actually going into cardiac arrest. So when you put that headset on, you completely leave the environment that you're in. So you're in a totally different world. We can put you on a street corner. We can put you in a park. We can put you in a school. And somebody in front of you is going to collapse. And you have to take the skills that we've taught you and now save the person in VR. You can not save the person, or you can potentially injure or hurt yourself. And there are things that you have to take into an account when you're actually doing CPR in a real situation.
So if I become one of your students, like, what's the process? Like, what's the first thing I have to do, a series of train up before I actually go and test? Like, what's the process for that?
So to become a student, you just reach out to us on my website, upskillvr.com. And one of the training specialists will get back in contact with you to figure out exactly what you need. And you don't have to do anything else. We bring everything to you.
Wow.
So you just we just show up.
Is it like individual or organization or both?
Both. We primarily focus on organizations, but we've done training for individuals as well. We're never turning anybody away. We have a campaign that we're working on in 2020. It's a Million Heroes campaign. So we want to go around the U.S. using VR technology. Upskill is going to go around the U.S. and literally attempt to train 1 million people in 1 year.
Are you the only one doing this now?
The way that we are, yes.
Brilliant.
Yes. Awesome. There are different types of trainings that are being done in VR with CPR, but they're not like we do it.
What's different about Upskill?
So the different types of trainings they have with VR, without getting way too deep in the weeds, you have the different types of ways that you can utilize it, whether it's like a 360 video where somebody's pre-recorded this video and you're an observer, versus being with us, you're literally a participant. This is not something that's pre-recorded you have to watch somebody else do. You have to do it. So that's the biggest differentiator between us and other people that are using VR for any type of emergency training, emergency response training. They're using 360 video, so you're observing, which is nothing wrong with that, but you need to hone your skills. So the best way to do it is to do it. So we're going to scare you a little bit. That's the point. We're going to scare you.
I know it's going to be a little scary.
But that's the point. But those are emotions that you need to know that you're going to have, so that when you take the headset off, we can talk about it. So I can tell you at this point, your heart rate was at 110. Tell me what you were thinking right then. So let's talk about that.
When I was on the plank.
Yeah.
The plank. Yeah, I could feel it.
Yeah.
My heart rate was up.
It was up.
So you were monitoring that through the headset.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the headsets calibrated to be able to do that. Wow. And then for doing the CPR, for the people who can't tolerate it, we do have options for people who can't tolerate the headset. But with something so simple as putting a Fitbit on, at this point during the CPR, I can tell you that your heart rate was this and your CPR compression rate went down to here, or before you even started. Let's deal with the actual physicality of what's going on inside you even before you get started. So let's talk about that. So I let my instructors, they run you through the entire scenario. And the first time is prompted. So you're literally being told step by step by step what to do. But the second time that we run you through, after we talked about your emotions, what you were thinking, giving you some tools to try to calm yourself down in the moment, because in those moments you are going to need to calm down. And in order to be able to do what you need to do, we give you those tools and then we put you back into the headset. This time it's not prompted. You have to figure everything out.
You just
on your
have
own.
To execute.
Yeah.
So I couldn't see what you were doing once I had the headset on. So right. How do you control that? Or what's the system that you're using when the student or the trainee is in the headset?
It's a part of the program, that the software program that we use to conduct the training. We can see the analytics of what's going on while you're in there. On top of that, our instructors usually use some type of device as something sort of like a Fitbit, so you can feel it.
Okay.
So in the moment when we're going back and talking about it, and we're literally playing back the video of your experience, because we record you in VR so you can see how well you did. And then at this particular moment you were doing chest compressions at this particular time, but you forgot to breathe or you stopped or whatever the situation was, I can see to the minute of what that was, and then turn around and look at your heart rate and take you back to that place so we can talk about what you were feeling and what you were thinking in that moment.
That's definitely amazing, because I'm thinking back to normal CPR. Well, not, I guess, normal, right?
It is.
Analog.
There you go. I like that. I'm going to use that. I'm stealing that.
Analog classes.
Yeah, I'm stealing that.
Where you're just like, you're just pushing on the mannequin. You know, there's no way for the instructor to evaluate.
To make that real.
You know, they had that little, you know, the little box off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
It would light up red or green if you were doing it properly. But I think you having that type of information and being able to read a person's body reaction or the sensors in their brain and how they're reacting to the situation, I think that's very valuable for saving lives.
Yeah.
So it's you and what's your staff look like? You have
all of our staff are either veterans or first responders. That's one of the requirements, that you have to be one of the two.
Okay.
We have
Why?
A lot of people.
Why?
Because those are the people who I wanted on my staff, pretty much. There was no real rhyme or reason other than us outside of the first being a first responder, because I don't, certain things, if you've been in the game for long enough, I don't have to teach you as a first responder. I just have to teach you this is what you need to portray to the students. And you bring in real world years and years and years of hands-on experience. My most senior instructor, because we call ourselves a training specialist.
Okay.
My most senior training specialist, he retired as a medic from the Army, then retired from the fire service. So he's been in the game.
So he's got 40 years at least. 50 years of at least.
And he's still going.
Wow, that's awesome.
So that's the type life-saving of experience that our instructors are bringing. And that we have a couple of instructors that are still active police officers right now. We're bringing all of that experience into the classroom. So it's just certain things I just don't have to teach them. And as an initiative for just my other veterans, my brothers in arms, I want to make sure that they have an outlet, you know. And I feel like there's a missing link there, that some people may not realize that they have it and that still have that active service. And that I'm not going to say that that is the cause of certain suicides, but I feel like if I can just help that in any kind of way by giving them another way to serve, because that's the way that they're used to doing anyway. And if it's something that they're interested in, that gives them a skill that they can use outside of upskill as to become an instructor, and then they're serving the public, which is what they're used to doing anyway. So for the veterans that are not employed or underemployed, that's why I target them.
So right now you have the CPR going, training. What other training venues do you have within upskill?
So we have what we call a BU Blueprint Emergency Training.
BU.
I don't know where that came from. But what we do is we come into people's homes and we teach them how to prepare their house in the event of an emergency. So something so simple as if your house catches on fire, Do you know where your 2-year-old is going to be? Because they're not going to be in the bed. In the event that the front door is not an option, do you know how to get out of here? Do you know some things that you need to have in your house to be able to save you in the event something happens? Do you understand that you can move over one piece of furniture 6 inches and it can save your life just by moving one piece of furniture over?
How does that happen? Because I'm thinking like, is my house set up?
Probably not.
For emergency?
And it probably like, not. And then I'm looking at it from a first responder. It's a nightmare. Some houses that we go into are nightmares because we have trouble getting into them. So it's just stuff, just random place that it doesn't need to be. Also, the average runtime for a lot of places is about 8 to 10 minutes. So if your car is flipped over and it's on fire and you can get out, but you don't know how, you might burn up by the time we get there. Or you may be passed out from smoke inhalation, things of that nature before we get there. So we teach you how to give you, not only teach you, but give you the tools, things, fire extinguishers, the rescue me tool that we have to self-extricate yourself out of the car. We also teach children how to self-extricate themselves. I never can say that word right. Get themselves out the car. How about that? That's how I'm going to say it.
That would work for us.
Yes.
That
you know, how to be able to get themselves out of the car. Because let me paint you a scenario. You're in a car accident. And you're passed out, but your 7-year-old in the back is not. Your hood's on fire. The car's flipped over. Kid need to get out of there because the ambulance and fire engine are 9 minutes away. The kid can be done passed out by the time we got there just from smoke inhalation alone. But if you teach them how to get out of there and have that tough conversation with them about getting out, then it might be able to save that child's life. So we give them the tool and we teach them how to do it.
Wow, that's it. Man, VR saving lives. Saving lives.
No, for the blueprint training, we come to your house and we use
The blueprint
is not in VR. Oh, we use your stuff.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
We come into your house. I get the blueprint name because we get the blueprint of your house. That's one of the requirements that we got to have. We got to have the rooms and we need to know what it looks like. And one of the training specialists will come in and see the house and see the layout of the house. And then we'll schedule the training after that. We don't want you to change anything before we get there.
So let me get this straight. Let me understand this. So what's the most like disorganized or the most difficult call you arrived and the house was a mess as far as like getting to the patient or the person in that needed your help?
It was actually here in D.C. I'm not originally from this area. I'm from Louisiana originally. So we ran a call here and it was an elderly person. She was obese and she was up a flight of stairs that somewhat went around a curve in the house. The best way kind of I can explain what it looks like was a curve. So we get there and we couldn't open the door because it was so much stuff that was just
right
there.
You mean her front door?
Her front door.
Wow.
Like the door was unlocked, but we had to shove the door open because she had boxes, just stuff everywhere. Right. So we make our way up the stairs and the bedroom wasn't quite as bad, but the way she had the bed positioned, we had a hard time trying to get her out of their room simply because of the way she had the bed positioned. And then because of the way the bed was positioned in relation to the door and her size, it took 6 of us to how to kind of maneuver her out of there because it was just all she had to do was move the bed. Well, one, change the position of the bed, like instead of being horizontal, being vertical, change the position and put the bed on the other side of the room, we wouldn't have had that problem.
Wow.
Just making that one change in her room.
Wow, that makes it.
The bedroom beside cleaning the house up.
Wow.
Let's
start there, step one.
Yeah,
keep the house tidy,
but she
just in case.
She couldn't get around. She was a large person.
Some people have difficulties. That's a serious thing. That's a serious thing.
But it was a nightmare for us because we're trying to get her down the stairs, but we're having to maneuver around all this stuff in the way. People sometimes just don't realize it looks good in this position, but if you just move a couch over just a little bit more, it can one somewhat baby proof your house because people think about the plugs and things in the corners of chairs, things like that. But if they're anything like my son thinks he's Peter Pan sometimes. He feels like he's going to get on something and jump off. And I think he thinks he can fly and it never works. So, and I've run enough call with kids with, you know, dislocated arms, things of that nature to know my son ain't the only one that thinks that way. So if you just move furniture just a little bit, sometimes it can prevent even injuries. people don't think about. You should have a fire extinguisher in your car.
So if I go home today, mm-hmm. and I wanted to kind of like set my house up, what's some things I should look at my house right now when I go home this evening that I could kind of reconfigure to make it easier for, you know, someone like yourself, first responder, to make it easy for you guys when you arrived and, you know, help save me or somebody in my house?
First thing, is there anything that's impeding the door opening completely? And if, depending on how the layout of your house is, kind of hard to say, but if you don't have...
So I have a three-story, so I have basement, mid-level...
Yeah, your house is
and
like
then,
ours.
And then the second floor. Where
so
all the
your stairs need to... There should be nothing anywhere near those stairs when we're going up.
Yeah.
When you're going into different bedroom doors, ladies, unfortunately, you're going to move lamps, you're going to move dressers, you're going to move things, because if that door won't completely open, it's going to be a problem. It could be a problem getting... Not only for us getting in, for you getting out. Because in the event, when... Say your house, hypothetically, smoke rises and it's in the living room, that smoke is going to come upstairs to the bedroom and you can't see. So if you can barely open the door and you don't know what's on the floor in front of the door, now you got a problem. Not only do you have to get out, you got to figure your way out and know the layout of your house. Know exactly where things are. So you should be able to maneuver around your house without even being able to see it. That's the biggest thing. I think about the movie Enough with Jennifer Lopez in it, where she learned step by step where the couch was, where the chair was. So whenever I think it was her ex-husband, if I'm not mistaken, came in to try to hurt her, she knew the house better than he did. And she strategically moved stuff a certain number of steps just so she knows. So if you, I know my house that way, to the point to where I can tell you how many steps, my steps it is from my front door to my first couch that I'm gonna get to, that's on the left hand side. So not, maybe not being that intricate, but you at least need to know the approximate distance. So we teach you things like that, you know, coming in and making sure that if nothing else, you know your house when we leave.
So I'm hearing clear paths.
Clear paths.
And know
clear paths.
Yeah, and know the layout of your house. Mm-hmm. What's another one?
Have a fire extinguisher in there. Have a fire extinguisher.
I don't have one.
For every level you need one. To... Yeah, for every level you need one fire extinguisher.
Dude, I mean, like, so
they have, you can go to Home Depot.
Home Depot.
You can go to Home
my
Depot.
House. I think I've had one before, a little small one. They come in different colors,
yeah.
Right? They're like, I think they do. Come
I think
in. It's like this new modern.
Oh, I'm gonna say the only ones I've seen at Home Depot are the red ones.
The red ones,
but they come in different sizes.
Okay.
But you could just have just a small one, and then understand, don't put water on every fire. I can't stress that enough. Please don't put water on everything that catches on fire, because it could get worse.
For example?
If your grease is on fire, don't put no water on that.
Yeah, grease fire is not.
Don't put no water on that.
That's not a good.
First thing, remember, cut the heat source off. I can't tell you how many times that I've come into a house and it's smoke everywhere, but the stove is still on. Just... Mm. Cut it off. Start there.
Little safety. People lose their mind when tragedy happens.
And we teach you to calm down. So what we do to create that panic, we blindfold you. We blindfold you and make you get around your house,
Whoa.
Make you get out your car. So when we put you in the car,
man,
I'm going to...
serious training. It's like...
we lock the doors, but you don't know which door is locked. Only one of them is open.
Like a POW camp up in here.
Yeah, but you will be surprised. Kids are by far the ones that catch on the quickest. So try before you pry, things that they teach us. So if I blindfold you, you should know to pull the door before you panic, you know? And sometimes people just don't calm down enough to think about, like, hey, this is my car. I got to get out of here and think safely. So we just make you panic a little bit. So you don't know which one of the doors is going to be locked.
So I definitely, but you gotta get out. I definitely see, you know, I'm picturing in my head, like, man, I need to go home and I need to go safety proof my house. Like,
yeah, it's just something, just knowing your house, whether you move anything or not. I'm not saying that you got to move. Some people may need to move stuff and some people may not, but if nothing else, if I asked you right now, where is the tallest dresser in your house? Where is it located and what's beside it? And approximately how far is it
it's
from?
It's in my bedroom because, you know, I'm a little vertically challenged and I can't use that top drawer.
He said that, not me.
Actually, this dresser is like about as tall as, I'm 5'5", so this dresser is up there. And when I open the top drawer, I could barely see in it sometimes. So I have to like tippy toe up to get on.
So but, for you, that's that is the tallest one. That's,
like, oh, you gonna ask me that question?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I know that.
Yeah.
So but I have this very tall. Beside it, there's nothing because it's like right next to the wall, and there's a window there. So
okay.
There's nothing.
Is that dresser right blocking any part of that window?
No.
Okay, that's good. No. That's what it's I'm saying. Like, you may not need to do anything.
So windows and doors, like yeah, that's what I'm picking up.
You
want to think
because you can get disposable ladders that you can just roll up and keep in your house, and they hook on the side of it. Because what if the front
there's
door is not an what if the front door ain't an option, but you got to get out of there, and we 8 minutes away, and the smoke is getting thicker and thicker and thicker. Yeah, just and I'm not saying get out there and try to, you know, climb out the window and things of that nature, but you at least in the event that you absolutely had to and your life depended on it, you at least want the option like this is what I'm going to do. Basically having an emergency plan and making sure that everybody understands what to do. I mean, you know how it was when you was in school. We had fire drills, earthquake drills, drills. So
even in my last in the workplace too,
they have
them.
But we don't think about that when we get home. Because not to say that you can't rely on EMS, that's what we're there for, but what are you going to do until we get there? You know, and you don't have any control over that, and sometimes we don't either. So, I mean, we get there absolutely as fast as we can, but the time frame, when seconds count, I mean, you sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And then people and pets and things of that nature, it's just...
That was my next question, B, because I have a little dog, so...
Do you lock him up at night?
No, I don't.
We teach you where he's probably going to be.
So definitely, you know, how does a person who has pets... I have a little 8-pound dog, so I could imagine somebody with, like, 2 or 3 big dogs. Like, what can they do?
They have to, one... I think it just depends on, again, the lay of the house and what their routine normally is like. Because just like you have a routine, dogs have a routine. So we'll basically teach you where the dog is probably going to be. Like, your kid is not going to be in the bed if something happens. Mm. They don't run in the bed. They don't do that no more.
So you mean
the
little kids. But if it's not at night, everybody's sleeping. Everybody should be in their bed, right?
Should. But in the event that something is going on, kids may or may not try to run to their parents' room.
Oh, okay, I see what you're
saying. And what if it by the time, because a lot of people sleep with their doors open, their bedroom doors open, which I don't suggest at all.
Why not?
Because you shut the door because it stops whatever smoke that could be coming in there. So if your door is open and your smoke alarms don't work, which a lot of people's smoke alarms do not work. They're there, but they don't work. And by the time you notice anything that's going wrong, it's engulfed. You can't even see your kid at that point. So what are you going to do? So do you know where to go look for them? Yeah. Do you know your house well enough to be able to crawl on the floor to go look for that child? Because you may not be able to stand up. I'm not going to say you can't, but you may not be able to stand up and walk just to go get them because you can't see. And then you got to breathe too. So if you're walking through this smoke, then what are you going to do?
Yeah. I never really looked at it. Safety, you know.
Most people don't.
From that perspective. So how many years in the making are you now to upskill from when you started till now?
3 years.
3 years?
3 years. 3 years. And we're just getting our stride now.
So we're just getting our stride. So 3 years in the making.
Yeah. It took us for me to go from concept to just having the viable software product was 1.5 years.
Wow.
Because... One, funding was the big issue.
Money.
Yeah, funding was the big issue. And then I knew what I knew, which was being a first responder. And I knew how to play VR and I knew how to play games, but how to take that to the education space, there was a period in time there where I just wasn't really even seeking funding. I wanted to figure out to make sure, one, if this is something that I could actually pull off, which, I mean, by that time, you weren't going to tell me that I couldn't anyway. But I was trying to figure out how I was going to do it and then what I wanted it to look like. What was its purpose? And then what were the capabilities? And Oculus changed the game when they came out with that Oculus Quest, because prior to the Oculus Quest, you needed a $2,000 computer. The headsets were $600-$700. It wasn't a very much consumer market, regular consumer market. I'm not gonna say regular, but it wasn't geared toward,
like, you know,
the average consumer is not gonna pay $700 for a headset, and then you got to buy all the cables and the stands, and it could get expensive very quickly. So when the Oculus, there were other cheaper options, but they were not something that I can use, because Google Cardboard has been around forever, but it's a cardboard box on your face that you got to hold. There's nothing that I can do with that. There are certain mobile applications, but there's no degrees of freedom. So meaning the only thing that you can do is move your head to the left and to the right. You can't interact with the environment the same way. So when the Oculus came out with the Oculus Quest, where it has 6 degrees of freedom and you can move around and is mobile, you don't need a PC. That changed the game for me.
Wow. Wow. So was it... So the early stage prototype, did you like...
it was horrible.
I mean...
it was horrible.
Little stick figures,
well,
little cutouts. Like, I mean, how'd you cook it up in the lab, per se?
When Carla tried to get in there and develop it herself... Yeah, that's pretty much what it looked like.
It was an ugly baby.
Oh, it was ugly. Ooh, but it was one of them bless your heart babies. Bless. Like,
that's a cute. That's his bless his heart.
That's what it was.
is that what people say when they like? Oh, bless his
heart. Like, you see my baby? Oh, bless his heart. Bless his
heart. Which translates, your baby ugly.
You got an ugly baby.
You got an ugly baby.
Like, there ain't no baby. Oh, that's what that is?
All babies are cute. They all cute.
To their parents.
Oh, my goodness. Talking about people.
I didn't. I said all babies are cute to their parents. I don't have to think your baby cute. You made that baby.
I was a cute baby.
I like to think I was a cute baby. I'm still cute. Like,
I was a cute baby. You know, I'm just saying. You know. So you're there like, you know, Dr. Jekyll, you know, Frankenstein project, trying to put this thing together.
Yeah, I was learning how to develop at the same time I was trying to develop. Mm. I had no experience in development at all, so... Yeah, that thing was horrible.
Who'd you get to help you?
I reached out to a company in the UK called Dual Good Health, and that's where they did it. Essentially, they did it for me.
Why not the US?
Like, I didn't find out about the US company Notion Theory until I got here to VIR. So our next projects that we're doing to upgrade what we currently have by putting different avatars, things of that nature, we're going to be working with Notion Theory here in DC for that. So right now, we only have... a male avatar, and right now in the U.S. as it stands, 37% of all females do not get CPR performed onto them simply because they got boobs.
Wow.
But admit what makes it worse, we only make up half the population, 50% of the population. Yeah. So if you take 37% from that, then yeah, that's a big problem.
That's a big problem.
So big problem.
So you brought it up to VIR here at Bunker Labs. Let's dovetail into that.
Yes.
I want to know. So how'd you find out about Bunker Labs, and how'd you move your way to being a part of the residency?
So I took, I'm finna screw this up.
Go ahead. It's okay.
Entrepreneur.
Like, no pressure.
Yeah,
no pressure,
I know, here. Right? I'm sorry, Hank.
This is just a regular conversation.
Yeah,
just to let everybody know, this is the Team Room Talk podcast, where we have candid conversations.
Oh, it's going down.
Real people talking about the successes and failures of their journey. And so right now we're talking with Carla Bond, talking about upskill VR and how she got to the VIR.
Mm. Veterans in Residence. Come on now. You got it right this time. All right now.
So how'd you get here?
So I applied for the Entrepreneurship Bootcamp for Veterans, EBB.
Was that through Capital Post, or was that, who's that? Who'd you do?
IVMF. Don't make me say what the acronym is.
Okay.
But
okay.
Is IBMF.
Those folks.
Yeah, those people.
Are they associated with Bunker Labs, or is this a separate organization?
That's a separate organization. So what they do, they have this program called Entrepreneurship Bootcamp for Veterans, EBV. Okay. I did their training the first time at, shout out to St. Joseph University. Their program there is called Veterans Entrepreneurship Jumpstart. Whoo, that's a lot to say, VEJ. But it's a 10-day residency that you go to university, and they give you a crash course in the MBA. So they cram, at least they attempt to cram, years of college study into 10 days. You have all kind of speakers, classes. You get your first dive into being in pitch. They give you all kind of training. So I did that. And from one of the speakers there mentioned Bunker Labs and advised that we do the launch lab online. And when I went and completed the launch lab online, I'm like, okay, what next? I'm done. And from there, I found out about the VIR. And I applied to the VIR last year and didn't make it. But no, it wasn't because, I look back on it now, I wasn't ready.
Why do you think you wasn't ready?
Because I didn't even have viable product, and I still had to bless your heart, baby, at the time.
Okay.
No, so that was 2 years ago.
Okay.
Was it 2 years ago? I don't think it was 2 years ago.
This
but
is
either
2019, 2018, 2017.
I think it was the beginning of 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, 2018, and I applied there, but I didn't have an actual viable product. I was still in the works with Dual Good Health, but I hadn't partnered with them yet. And yeah, from there, I didn't get in. My business name was totally different. And
what was it before?
Enlisted Heroes Rescue Training. Long.
I'm like, I'm confused.
Yeah. But see, my concept, yeah. What I did end up learning from doing the VEJ, I'm just going to use the acronyms, y'all. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Once I did that particular program, that's what made me change my business name. Because one of the things that they taught you was about branding. And one of the SCORE mentors, shout out to Matt for that one. He was like, it's too long. That's too long. I'm not going to remember that after we you know, leave each other here. I'm not going to remember that. And then my concept for my business was that I teach CPR utilizing virtual reality versus my company is a virtual reality company that teaches CPR. So the whole concept changed, and just from that one thing. And then when I applied again this time, of course, I got in it this time because I had my stuff together.
What'd you think about the process
of applying? It wasn't bad because I think I had already gone through it before and not gotten accepted, and then I had done a lot of self-development on my own and learned a lot on my own in between there, that I had a better concept of what they were looking for, one, and then how to answer the questions, two. So that was the biggest thing,
having
to answer their profile. But it was a breeze the second time around. Yeah. The first time, I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
It makes a difference. Yeah,
big difference.
It makes a difference. So you got to articulate your... the one thing I like about, you know, I didn't even go through Launch Lab to find out about the VIR. So I was introduced to Bunker Labs by a friend of mine, Rod Rodriguez. And he had actually, I met Seda and Emily for the first time at the Capitol Post, where he recorded a podcast with them. And we met.
Oh, nice.
We met during working with Intel analysts in Kuwait. So he's like, hey, man, you're in video. I'm doing this podcast. I want to get some video. You know, come over. So I came over. We did a little collaboration. And that's kind of how I figured out what Bunker Labs was. Went to the muster, 2018 muster.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, 2019 muster, I hit that. And, you know, I met Kelly and Kim. And who else is on there? I worked with Rich Cardona. A couple of people in the VIR, in the last VIR I worked with, and leading up to applying, it was like, hey, Chris, you should apply. So I did. But I could see where you say, like, answering those questions I was going through. I was like, whoa, like, okay, I got to think about this.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the biggest thing. I just had no answer for some of that stuff. And at the time, I hadn't zeroed in on exactly how I wanted this to look. I was still teaching at the same time, but VR was the VR. See, you got me saying it now.
VR
was an afterthought. I was still doing it the traditional way, gritting my teeth, but at the same time, I knew what I had going on in the background.
So you were teaching first, and then you added the VR?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know you said you was a gamer. What made you say, you know what, I need to make this virtual reality versus analog?
Because it was boring. I dreaded teaching the classes as much as I'm pretty sure the people that were taking
CPR them. Classes are not
fun at all. And I don't care how many antics that I was putting on to try. I was having it was just too much. It was to the point to where I have a full body mannequin at home, and I would take that mannequin just to make the most realistic scenario possible. Because think about it, when you take CPR, they tell you, okay, so you arrive on scene, or you arrive to find this patient or this person passed out. What are you going to do? That's not even decently realistic. So I was like, I'm over this. So I went and I bought a complete full body mannequin, arms, legs. He weighs about 120 pounds. So when I would do my CPR classes, for somebody usually the person that coordinated with me in order for me to come into the organization to be able to teach, usually already had the car and didn't need it. So I'd use them as my test dummy. And I would say, hey, I want you to go to work on the day of the class, and I want you to pretend like you just don't feel good. Just don't feel good. And then once I got there, I was like, throughout the day, make it worse. Let your family know what's going on, because any event somebody try to call. So I would get there, and then I would make that person disappear. They were there the entire time, and all of a sudden, they're not there anymore. All of their stuff is there, but they're not there. And I would time from the time I told them to go disappear somewhere to the time somebody realized that they were gone, and then watch them go into a complete utter panic. And then everything that I just taught you went out of the window. Because at that point, we're calling the caller. For instance, the last time I did it, they called the person's cell phone, and the cell phone was ringing. And somebody was like, here, you got to call it again. I'm like, it's right there. Why are you calling it again? Well, let's call our house. But mind you, the person's family was already informed that they're probably going to call in. Why? And her husband was like, no, she's not here. She's like, well, her stuff is here. Will she be anywhere else? She's like, no, if her keys and her stuff is there, she's probably still there. What do you mean she's not there? To act like he's in a panic. So they're walking around, things of that nature, looking for him or whatever. And the woman wasn't there. I had hidden the mannequin in the female bathroom and sat him on the toilet in a very awkward position. So after about 5 minutes or so, I was like, has anybody checked the bathroom? When they went in the bathroom and they saw the mannequin there that was dressed exactly like the woman was dressed that day, then they was like, oh, okay, I get what's going on now. But I didn't say anything. I just stood there and I'm like, well, what are you going to do? Because now we're 5-6 minutes into
pretty,
this.
Pretty way to make
it real. Because nobody ever just passes out right there in front of you in this control situation. So they had to maneuver this mannequin out of this really small stall. Before they started CPR on them, they were 8 minutes into them. After 10 minutes, the likelihood of somebody coming back is slim. We're 8 minutes into it and you haven't even started CPR yet. It took you 5 minutes to figure out that she was gone. So things like that.
That's serious.
That happened
I'm glad I didn't go to your CPR class.
But it was something that they never would forget at that point. Yeah. Because they're not dealing with a mannequin that doesn't have arms and legs. They have to maneuver them out of the bathroom, out of the stall, get them on the floor in a position to be able to do CPR, and then still remember to go get the AED. Somebody still got to remember to call 911. And at that point, but they saw at that point that, do you really know it as well as you think you do? And from that point, I was able to deal with how they felt while the person was missing and let them know this is how long it took. And then it was an eye opener for them. And I was like, that's usually how it happens. Wow. So you need to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I think I would remember that class if I went to your class with that scenario you just painted. That definitely would be something I would remember if I went to a CPR class. Because most of the time people go and they're like, I got to get my car.
Yep. And I don't want you to leave with just a car. I want you to leave with an experience and the knowledge. Just, if I pass out, anybody that I teach, I would hope that when you leave my class, I can trust that you know what you're doing.
You know, because people are just like just standing around mm-hmm. waiting for their turn. Like, yeah, you know what? I got to go pick up my kids.
Yep.
Oh, what I'm going to cook for dinner tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, like their brain is somewhere else.
Yep. And that's that. The thing is, one of the things that I pre-send out this packet and I get people to fill it out so I can see the number of kids that they got, things of that nature, get to know each one of the students as much as they'll allow me in so that I can make these classes as real as possible. And then if they have a picture of a loved one, I always ask them to bring it in with them. So in the moments where we are then using a mannequin, I'll take the picture of whoever that they have and slide it right next to the mannequin. That, because that was the closest thing to something real that I got. And when they're trying to zone out and go somewhere else, I slide that picture next to you. Then it, in my brain, I'm hoping that it awakens something in you that this could be that person that you're mm-hmm. very well looking at right now, even though what you're pushing on, it doesn't have any arms and legs. We're just going to disregard that.
Just a mannequin.
Yeah, it's just a mannequin. But so that's one of the things that in working with Notion Theory that I'm hoping that we can accomplish is by being able to change. If I'm working hypothetically with somebody that are serving active duty people, putting the avatar in there isn't a uniform. Because I want it to look like somebody that is going to look normally to you. So if I'm going to a school, you're going to do adult CPR. But I want to make those kids as real as possible.
Because I'm thinking like all the Army training we've done as far as medical, quick trauma or ABC work. And, you know, we have virtual reality for like vehicles flipping over, mm-hmm. weapon simulators, you know.
Flight simulators.
So, you know, I'm thinking back. I think I've never seen anything virtual reality as far as first aid.
It's not.
You know,
outside of watching.
Yeah, I know we do. Well, some of the scenarios I've been within my organization, our stuff is pretty, we try to get as realistic as we can.
Mm-hmm.
But some other organizations who don't have those resources, you know, like in my organization, if a guy goes down, he's actually getting stuck.
Right.
Like, we're not simulating, like, no, you.
Same thing I went through.
Like, yeah, you actually getting.
Same thing I had to go through. We stuck each other.
You know, and then we have other ways. So if a guy gets shot, we, you know, we use other resources mm-hmm. to simulate that. And it's like you're dealing with real elements.
Right.
But not the actual human. But you still, you know, we're going through the same procedure, you know, mm-hmm. stopping the bleeding, you know. Using Curlex, you know, straight trauma procedures right away.
Tampons.
Yeah, yeah.
Take it old school with that.
Karen, tampons.
Just tampons.
In your pocket. Like, what are you doing with this?
Like, just in case somebody gets shot.
No. That's,
it's
that's,
not what you think. I swear to God, it's not what you think.
So, but I can see that being a part of, you know, big picture. So what do you see upskill in the next 3 to 5 years?
Hopefully having some defense contracts to be able to teach their medics. And essentially, I feel like everybody should have a CPR card not necessarily the card, but we can give you the card. but being trained on it more or less than anything, having virtual reality, our training to be commonplace. So instead of people just getting used to the analog just to get the card to want to actually want to learn and using us to be able to take their training and make sure that the people that they are sending through this and training is actually equipped. So to have multiple organizations that we're partnering with to help them with their any type of emergency response training. Cause yeah. we can do workplace, certifications, things, and working with insurance companies to see if we can partner up so that if a person goes through our blueprint training and we certify their home, possibly getting their insurance premiums lower because they know that they've gone through extra steps to try to.
Is that a thing now? Like, no health cut rate on insurance. Yep. I mean, because I know for like driving, if you go to, you know, a defensive driving, or you actually take some lessons, you probably
you can get your premium.
You get premium dropped a little bit.
Right, we're looking to work with different insurance companies, homeowners or health insurance companies that would be willing to partner us with and help their customers out by doing that. And then we have a network of customers that we can help them with as well.
Because so. I can see that as a benefit for an organization that provides insurance if they get their staff trained
exactly
in some basic medical care, you know, in the workplace. Hey, you get a discount on your, you know, organization healthcare plan if your staff is trained.
Right.
Or the likelihood of, you know, people having it, like how many people have had an issue at work, some medical issue at work and probably died or something didn't.
I'm going to say the number is pretty high.
Yeah.
Because 80% of out of hospital sudden cardiac arrests occur at home. So if you are outside, if you're talking 80% of them, how many of those, you know, happen at work that don't go documented that way? I can't give you the specific number, but it's quite a few. And then on top of that, we are partnership with Zoll AED. So we make sure that we can get you the AED to make sure that you have it for your organization. Mm-hmm. And then we maintain it for you. So, because a lot of times with these organizations, they'll have the AED just to make, you know, codes for whatever, you know, that they need to operate in that building. But the batteries ain't been changed in 15 years. So even if you go to go use it, it doesn't
it's
work.
It's not even working.
It doesn't work. I've come to calls where that they say, well, oh yeah, the AED is there, but it doesn't work. Well, how long has it been not working? I don't know. It hasn't been working since I've been here. You know, and that's not a problem with a person, and you don't know you need it till you need it. And we're trying to eliminate that. So we come in monthly to make sure it's checked. We make sure that the batteries are switched out, things of that nature. If it's not working, we do the maintenance on it and we replace it. The same thing with our headsets. Also to being able to get it at Upskill VR in school. So something as middle school as an option, I feel like every child should know CPR, especially with childhood obesity being the way that it is and people going to schools and the way that they are, you know, that kids need to know that. So if making it a part of school curriculum, as an option, like an elective.
Well, it used to be like
it did
health classes.
It did.
You know, because that's where I learned CPR.
That's where I learned CPR.
And, you know, we had the mannequin, the dirty mannequin.
with dirty mannequins.
with that sweatsuit.
Yeah.
Or no, like you have a mannequin with no clothes. Like you have to put clothes on the mannequin. Like that's what I remember.
From 1982 that's like, been on a mannequin since 1982.
Yeah, you know, or if they did, I think. After a while, they started putting arms and legs on the mannequin.
Well, ours had arms and legs.
But it'd be like some old school two-stripe jogging suit. Not Adidas. They had a two stripes, not three stripes.
Yeah, ours had this red yeah, jogging suit. Like red. And I'm like, is this, where did you get this from?
The mannequins in school remind me of, what's the scary movie? The dude, is it Jason with the mask?
Yeah.
Like
Michael Myers?
Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like that same, that's how the mannequins. I'm not joking. You know what I'm talking about. I'm being for real right now. Like that's what the mannequins.
So you get over this
mannequin and you take the alcohol swab and you like you
and
gotta go
still
down
dirty.
There.
Alcohol swab, like, come back brown.
Like, oh my goodness, I remember that. But I think now in this era with kids, you know, we're kids living in a digital age. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a big home run. And I see you got a big open playing field there.
Yeah.
With this, just in CPR alone,
right?
You know, first aid, and I think people. We could definitely use that.
Yeah, all right. If we couldn't come into schools, I was talking with a couple of people and going into colleges because you have curriculums like allied health, nursing, psychology, whatever. And having the colleges lease the headsets from us, and we train their staff on how to use them, and then we let them be a college and let them do it. And the only thing we have to do is come in and maintain the headset, update it. Something goes wrong, replace it, things of that nature. But their staff is actually teaching it.
What's a setup cost? Like, what's a one training kit cost? A setup
for us for you or guys? Total, or for somebody else?
Just like, give me a ballpark on like what's the setup cost for training kit.
It's just a headset.
Just one headset. That's it.
It's a headset.
Really?
Now it's one headset per person.
Okay.
So, and one mannequin per person. So it's no, and the scenarios where you have a two rescuer, because you know in CPR they had to do it with two rescuer. We always use a full body mannequin for that. Now the full body mannequin hit me up for about $2,500. Wow. Hit me up for about
$2,500. Mannequin cost that much for a mannequin?
Like for a full body mannequin.
A CPR mannequin?
No, a regular CPR mannequin, you can get them as low as $100. Mm. But the ones that I got.
Oh, you got the special.
The ones that you were talking about with the lights on, and those can get a little expensive.
Oh, really, really?
And then I have one that is the Braden Pro mannequin for, and I use those for primarily for students. And when I say students, I mean middle school and high school kids that have not, that should know anatomy and physiology, but they don't. And what it does when you do the chest compressions, the path that the blood will travel up to the brain, it lights up. So if you're doing the chest compressions correct, the brain, the actual mannequin's head will light up. Mm. And if you're not, you can see the path of the blood light up, but the brain won't. Wow. And that's the whole point in doing CPR is getting that blood to the brain and it's a hit with them because they can actually see the point in which they're doing. We have the link loop learning device, all kind of things that to get them involved. But they're the big win. Everybody's just waiting to put on the headset.
They just want to put the headset on. That's,
right. But for the people who can't tolerate it, we have other things for them to make it as real as possible as we can. Things like that mannequin that I can still play your chest compression rate and all that thing back to you because it's attached via Bluetooth to my iPad. So I can see. I don't have
everything.
To.
Mac.
Yeah. But I'm sorry. It's not my iPad. It's my Android because the app is not on.
Oh, my goodness.
So, sorry, Apple people.
Sorry. No
but it is an Android app.
Android's all right. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
But it's attached to my
Apple's
Chromebook.
Apple's better.
I eat my apples. I don't talk on them. I'm vegan. So.
Apple's better.
Yeah. I like apples.
So, while you're here in the VIR, what's your outlook? You know, how are you planning to leverage this platform? You know, the resources we have here through Bunker Labs to help you build upscale VR.
So I want to be able to reach out to as many people as I can and just spread the word about it, basically, and just get it out there because we have the product. We have everything now. We're just at the point where we're just trying to get it out there, hopefully get some contracts lined up so we can start to do more because the more we get ourselves out there, the more contracts that we're able to gain, the more traction that we're able to get, the further we can reach out because we're not limited just to the DMV. We can go anywhere in the U.S. right now. From this, I'm in the works of trying to start a nonprofit to take this overseas to be able to provide CPR training to people in less fortunate areas of the world, but provide it to them for free and stem that to using VR, give that to them over there. So my goal is to have for every one person here in the U.S. that pays for the training, one person will be able to get trained overseas.
Wow, that's nice. That's nice. Everybody, CPR for everybody.
Everybody. Everybody needs to know.
VR for everybody.
If you are a human or you know a human, you need to know CPR. We have it for the pets as well. So we have a pet. I actually have two pet CPR instructors.
But wait a minute.
There's CPR for pets.
Yeah, I've seen. My little dog, I don't know, his breath don't smell too hot sometimes.
Yeah, but like,
So for a pet, now we open that door. So
oh Lord. Like,
so for a pet, like how do you do that? Like walk me through that. Like I'm intrigued now. Like,
so it depends on the size of the dog, but the hand placement is the same no matter what. But there, you know, you can't lay a dog on his back, so you lay it on the side and you put a hand under him and over the top. And yeah, there are ways that you can breathe for him, but this is a way that you do their CPR for them.
So you still give them...
And yes, you we get calls.
I mean, how many cases you've had of a dog or a cat or...
Is in my career?
Limited to dogs and cats or...
Yes, for us, yes. I can't help you.
So you haven't had somebody actually call about their dog or cat being passed out?
In my career, I've only had it 4 times.
Really?
4 times. Somebody cats,
actually. Tell me about that. Yeah, I want to know about that.
They call one... The first time, it was the dog that was choking, and there's a way to do the Heimlich on a... We're not supposed to call a Heimlich anymore. It's a way to... help a dog if they're choking. And luckily, one of the firefighters that was there with me that walked in the house before I did already knew how to do it. So we were able to help that dog out. And we just advised the, you know, the owner to take him to the vet. There are other times that we've gotten called and the dog wasn't choking. The dog was just out. So at that time, I had no idea.
People love their pets, man.
Yeah, I had no idea what to do for a dog. Because, I mean, they don't train us that.
That was my next question. So do you even get... It's just theory.
No. Our actual pet CPR class, you actually... Okay, so an actual certification.
But in, like, your initial training in EMS, you know... I mean, I think the theory is still the same, right? Like, you know, air... So,
air,
oxygen, and blood going to the brain.
Yeah, you know, the concept is the same. Okay,
how you do it is
a little bit different.
Mechanics is different.
Yeah. But I never got trained on it. I can't say what other counties and states do, but Carla has never.
So basically, what she's saying, people, don't. If you call and Carla show up, your pet might not make it.
No, because I know now. I know what to do now. But that's not an area that I particularly am as well versed in as the two pet CPR instructors that work for Upskill. And we get all our newest, we're getting a part of our advisory board is a veterinarian. So one of those instructors, we have a scientist on our advisory team. We make a neuroscientist, so we make sure that what we're doing is
legit.
Yeah, so that's not an area where Carla particularly is as passionate.
That's why you got an expert.
Exactly. So I have people that are very passionate about pets. Yeah. That's why I hire them. Wow. We make sure that people that are deaf and hard of hearing, we have options for them to take CPR as well. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. That's actually another section we haven't hit, like the blind and the deaf.
Mm-hmm. They still have to know too.
Wow.
So,
give me a quick overview. How does that work for somebody who's either blind or deaf?
We don't have it for the blind. We have it for the deaf and hard of hearing. Mm-hmm. And I have an instructor. He's a police officer at Gallaudet University. So he teaches all those courses for me. And he's actually deaf.
You got it covered. You got everything covered.
Yeah, pets. He's deaf. Yeah, he's deaf.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
I met him.
Well, not nice that he's deaf, but nice that he's...
Yeah, and I met him when I was a police officer at Georgetown University. Right.
He was a police officer?
Yeah.
Really?
When I started off my military career, I started off as a master at arms.
Whoa.
And I cross-rated to corpsman.
Whoa, okay,
I met him when I was over there actually going through our actual police academy. That's where I met Matthews. Shout out to Matthews. He's gonna take care of all that. So I'm not gonna say that I don't get involved. I just make sure I surround myself with people that know way more than I do about areas that I know not that much about. So Matthews is the only person that's on my team that is not a veteran. For obvious reasons. But he's been in law enforcement for a long time.
I mean, to your point about surrounding yourself, I was at a business seminar once, and one of the presenters there was like, "Hey, do you know the difference between an entrepreneur and a CEO?" And then, you know, a couple of people threw out a couple answers. It was basically, you know, an entrepreneur tries to do everything, where CEOs delegate. That's when you cross that bridge. It's like, you know what? I can't do everything. I need somebody to do this. And then you start building that team.
And but if I'm doing everything, how am I going to run the business?
Exactly. You know, so you're definitely a CEO.
And there's just certain things that I'm not as passionate about. Right. I'm not saying that I'm not passionate about pets, But that's just not my
area. It's just
area.
Not possible to be cover everything.
Yeah, I'm
it's
not. I mean, I'm a firm believer in that jack of all. If you jack of all trades is a master at none. So I know what I'm good at, and I know what I know, but I also know what I don't know. So instead of I well verse myself in things that I can have at least a conversation with Matthews. I can talk to Matthews in sign language and. Well enough to I can have a decent conversation with him, but in the event that I'm lost, we have apps, we have things that we can talk
you
to.
You guys communicate with each other.
We can communicate, but why spend a lot of time going down that area when I have somebody that's a living expert in it? And then it helps him out, it helps me out. I learn from him, he learns from me. So I know enough in the areas where that's not my expertise. To have a conversation, and then I leave it to the experts. Okay. That's why I hired.
So let us know, where can we find you? This is the point in the show where you get to drop all your social, all your links, all your phone numbers, email addresses. So
y'all can't see me, but I'm getting my phone.
Just this is your time to go ahead and drop. Let people know if you wanna upskill VR. Did I say that right? Upskill.
If you want to increase your skills using VR.
You want to skill up through VR.
You know what? I was almost.
I know we had a conversation about
almost
that.
About to name my business that at one skill point. Up. But my blog, shout out to my blog. It's coming. Mm-hmm. But thank you for that one because I'm keeping that. I'm keeping
skill
that.
Up.
Skill up.
Skill
Our blog
up.
Is coming. Our skill blog
up.
Is coming.
Skill up VR. You know, the skill up VR. I mean, we just flipped it, right? Upskill, skill up. It's you know, skill up VR.
We didn't flip anything. You did that, what? And I just took it. I didn't do. I'm not gonna take no credit for that. Like, because I mean, it was awesome.
Make sure you go and check out Carla's blog, Skill Up VR. It's coming soon out there on the www. What do they call it now? The internet, the information highway. Like, what's
I don't know what these kids calling this thing. The last thing I knew was the internet. I don't know what they're calling it
so
now.
So basically, everybody refers to whatever platform or channel they're on. So they just say Facebook or Google or Instagram. They don't say, it was on the internet. It was
You
know, back in the day, it was it was on the internet. So everybody just refers to whatever platform. So where can we find you?
So my website is upskillvr.com. That's upskillvr.com. We are same thing on Facebook and same thing on LinkedIn. If you choose to call us, that's fine. We take phone calls too. You can reach us at 202-681-4681.
So I'm looking right now. Let me see. I'm on your Facebook right now. Let me see. Do do do. We're friends. We writing. I'm posting a video on your Facebook
right now. This is happening right now,
this
y'all.
Is happening right now. Come on, cancel.
Rotate your device. Look at you. See how the case. This is what happens.
So hey, this is your first time live.
First live ever, y'all.
So we're
first
doing
live.
A doing
Why is
a podcast.
Mike up here? Oh,
that's how it is. Hey, Chris McPhee, Team Room Talk podcast here with Carla Bond. Upskill VR.
Upskill VR, y'all.
It's coming out soon. This will be episode 8 or 9. I have to check. Make sure.
I don't know.
But all your live, Facebook. Y'all. Facebook friends out here, you will definitely hear what Carla had to say about learning CPR and just skilling up and being healthy and saving lives. You got anything you want to say?
Check us out at upskillvr.com, upskillvr.com.
Peace.